This is Dr. XH Balthazar. I am broadcasting once again to present my findings from the world of the uncanny. On this broadcast, we explore folklore, which I had previously looked into some time ago. My interest was once again piqued when I overheard a young man telling his friends the same tale. Today we are conducting a phone interview. I have invited a guest who will tell us this story. Her story. Thank you for once again indulging my inquiry, Mrs. Lang.
Of course, Doctor. And Beatrice will suffice.
Forgive me. I suppose the span of our acquaintances relieves such formalities.
More than a decade now.
I recall the date. The 3rd of March, 1943. If you would, Beatrice, will you recount to me the event you dictated once more?
I have heard it told countless times, and the tales have changed so much through the years. I know for certain I am not the only one who lived through this, and I know I am not the first either. I suppose the best place to start would be the beginning. I was 15 years old, living in a small town on the border between Minnesota and Canada, near Lake Superior. I lived there with my mother, younger sister, father, and the family dog, Arlo. My father was a security contractor. My mother was the homemaker. We lived in a beautiful, two-story Victorian. By all standards, we were blessed. On my parents' anniversary, my father booked a stay in Thunder Bay. They were going to be there for the weekend. But my father had assured me the house would be secure. He reminded us at night to lock all the doors and windows, including the one in the basement. He also reminded us to keep Arlo close by. But my dog was always by my side, and he knew that. They were just nervous to leave us, and we were certainly worried about being on our own. Nevertheless, that Friday morning, our parents kissed us goodbye and drove off. They said they'd call us when they arrived at the hotel. My sister and I spent the day acting a mess, breaking all the rules that we could with the little freedom we had. That night we ordered in and watched television. It was a day indeed. We stayed up late that night. Almost to the next day. As the night dragged on, I could feel the fatigue set in. I glanced over and saw that my sister had dozed off on the sofa. Before doing the same, I called Arlo over. It was common for him to sleep beside me. But he didn't come. Barely able to keep my eyes open, I collapsed into my father's chair and was greeted by Arlo licking my hand. I was soon fast asleep with Arlo by my side.
I find it curious that you mention your father was a security contractor. That was a detail I was unaware of.
I suppose at the time I didn't think it of use.
Continue.
The next morning, my sister woke me quite suddenly. She asked me if I had let Arlo out. She said she couldn't find him. I thought this was strange. We walked to the backyard and found Arlo panting heavily, lying next to the cellar doors. We tried to drag him away, but he wouldn't budge. We dragged him all the way back into the house, but he stayed posted in front of the back window the rest of the day, staring out into the backyard. When we tried to drag him away, he started barking. It scared my sister, so I let him be. The day progressed as normal, aside from Arlo. As we went up for bed, Arlo still stood by the window. I tried to lure him upstairs with some food, but nothing was convincing him. I remember him looking at me as I went upstairs. That's the only time I saw him move that day. I thought he would come to my bedside in time. I mean, if anything, it comforted me that he was a good guard dog.
Shall we take a moment?
My apologies, Doctor. You know as well as I.
Yes. Take your time.
That night, I was awoken by the dripping of the sink faucet. It was an old house, but the sound still felt unfamiliar. I was a girl alone for the first time. I was frightened stiff. But then I was met with a familiar feeling as I felt Arlo beside me again, licking my hand. And it calmed me down. And slowly, I went back to sleep. I woke in the morning to the same dripping sound. I thought my sister had left the water running that night or something.
Beatrice?
No, I'm fine, doctor. When I entered the bathroom, my heart sank. I screamed. In front of me was Arlo, hanging from the shower head. His stomach was flayed open and his entrails spilling out onto the floor. There was so much blood. I heard my sister approach and instinctively shoot her away. She did as she was told. And I looked back at my dead dog. No clue what was going on. I was so confused. There were bloody footprints all over the tiles. This couldn't be real. I'm dreaming, I thought. Maybe. But then I saw written on the wall in Arlo's blood, humans can lick too. Someone was here. They could still be. Every inch of my skin crawled. I had never felt so unclean in my entire life. I didn't want to be in my body anymore, let alone in my house. I ran downstairs with my sister. We called the police. I checked all the doors, all the windows, every place that someone could have gotten in. I called out to my sister to stick by my side, but she didn't listen. She stared out into the backyard. I shushed her and scolded her, but she just looked out the window. That's when I looked out the window and saw a man standing there, covered in blood. I grabbed my sister and we huddled in the corner. I prayed that the police would arrive soon.
I have examined the police report. There was an abundance of evidence, but it was inconclusive. They have not apprehended a suspect.
Oh, my father was livid when he heard. He wrote letter after letter condemning them for mishandling the investigation.
There was no mention of the man you saw in the yard, or the writing on the wall for that matter.
I told them everything, but still, the investigation went nowhere. As if Arlo had written those words on the wall himself. It has been a long time, and I know you are thorough in your study. What do you make of this now, knowing what you know?
Thank you for sharing this story once more, Beatrice. I will say that while conducting investigations into your case, I have found some connecting threads. Firstly, your case is not uncommon in that area. I have found nearly a dozen similar police reports detailing the mutilation of household pets in and around the Great Lakes region, all of them which have now gone cold. I am planning to research this further, but I do have one question for you, Beatrice. Did the man you saw have any distinguishing features?
He did. He had a huge scar that ran from just above his eye to his collarbone.
This matches various police reports from other cases, as well as eyewitness accounts.
I haven't heard of anything like that.
It is a local legend told in pubs and around campfires. It has now evolved into somewhat of a ghost story. Further study will be necessary. I'm sorry there isn't more. Beatrice, thank you so much for sharing. The investigation is ongoing. Although we seldom find definitive answers, our search for them is relentless. Thank you all for listening to this broadcast. I hope to relay more of these tales and investigations into the unknown. But for now, goodbye and good night.